Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is June 15th, 2016. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 17,640, the NASDAQ at 4834, and the S&P at 2071. Tonight we are discussing the book Family Inc., Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth with author Douglas McCormick. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Let me introduce our guest. Joining me this evening is author and businessman Douglas P. McCormick. Doug holds a BS in economics from West Point and an MBA from Harvard. He is a co-founder and managing partner at HCI Equity Partners. We will be discussing his recent book, Family Inc., Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth. And Doug is joining me via telephone. Doug, can you hear me this evening?
I sure can.
Wonderful. It sounds like you're coming in nice and clear. I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
Yeah, no, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, the book really intrigued me, so I'm fortunate doing this radio show that from time to time we get some exposure to some of the books that are out there in the financial world. And while I don't call everyone I get, I certainly don't, this one really looked interesting. So I thought it would be fun to talk about it. I think it's a great concept. Let me say the name again so people understand, and then I would like you to maybe take a minute to talk about why you wrote this book. So it's called Family Inc., and it says, Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth. And you having an MBA from Harvard, I'm hoping that you're going to have a lot of good advice for us. But can you tell us what made you write that book?
Sure. I think it's really a reflection of my own journey in struggling with understanding the implications of a lot of these decisions. And I'm now in my mid-40s, and I've got two teenagers, and I've begun to watch them struggle with these choices. And one of the things that I think is challenging about this topic is being able to communicate a framework so that people can relate all the various different decisions that they have to make. And in many cases, people think that investment choices and career choices and retirement choices are different and independent, but the reality is they all relate together. And so I really wrote the book because I saw that need and the opportunity to help people navigate what I call the financial game of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this is a huge challenge that is only going to get bigger for the next generation, given what's happening in the economy and the labor markets. And so, you know, my attempt with the book is really to provide a different way to think about a very old problem.
Well, and I think you made a couple good points. One is a new way to look at it, and I want to touch on that for a second. And the other is, still to this day, we really aren't educating children in schools, unless you are getting your MBA or your business degree. We really are not educating our children in high school about finances. And I think it falls more on families. And I know somewhere in your book you say, you know, families aren't always having these conversations and it's time to. And so what I was impressed with on the book is that you set it up in sections. and chapters within each section so that you can organize it in a way that makes sense and it's easier to understand and easier to break it down. Because while what you said sometimes seems like, oh, that makes sense, you should pay attention to your career and your job and your assets, but you really set it out in an organized way. So can you kind of go over the concept you have where you talk about every family needs a chief financial officer?
Sure. Well, the basic premise is that there's been a lot of academic research and a lot of focus within the business community about how to employ best practices. And, you know, what I'm trying to say is that many of the best practices that have been tried and tested in the business world can be applied to the family financial situation. And so I make the argument that the family can be viewed as a business, and the family CFO is responsible for managing the two big assets that every family owns, and that's the family's labor and then their financial capital. And we all play this financial game of life where we sell our labor and our skills for money, and then we manage that money such that when we've depleted our labor, meaning it's time to retire, we can live off those savings long after we've retired to support us throughout our life. And so, you know, this framework, I think, allows the family CFO to use many of these tools that are used in business, and it allows you to customize the plan. So it's not just standard advice, but it's advice that's relevant to your own specific circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I think I would say once you accept that premise, I think everybody would agree businesses don't just manage themselves. They need somebody, some person in the family, that's going to take charge and be responsible for all of these big decisions. And those are not just making investment choices. It's managing the family income statement, managing the family balance sheet, managing choices about investments in education and career choice, insurance, entrepreneurship. There's a whole list of things that the family CFO should be doing.
And you know, I want to talk about those two businesses because that's something that really caught my attention when I was looking at the book about that managing the temporary labor business. I loved that piece. But can we take a moment and just talk about picking the CFO? Sometimes people
Sure.
might think it's automatically maybe the father of the home. Can you talk a little bit just for a minute about picking that CFO and what might go into that decision?
Sure. First of all, I would say it's a product of aptitude, interest, and time.
Mm-hmm.
And so whoever is the, you know, adult in the family that's got, you know, has an interest in these kind of topics, has the time to focus on it, and then also has the ability to, you know, think through insurance or think through these different issues, that person is probably best positioned. I would also say, based on my own experience, just because you're the family CFO does not mean you get to make all the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It means that you bring to the table the thinking about the trade-offs between these choices. And then, like any family, you know, there's all kinds of input, and things are usually a product of everybody's input.
Which studies have shown, when you take a consensus, you actually end up with a better answer. I know sometimes that there are times where someone has to make the decision, but getting that feedback and input from other members, when you get buy-in, there's a
yep.
more likely chance of success.
I think consensus is not always easier, but mm-hmm. it generally works out better.
Okay. So I'm going to have my first break in just about a minute, Doug, but one of the points I had mentioned was this temporary labor business. So when we come back from our first break, I want to talk about what that means to manage mm-hmm. the temporary labor business and why we call that temporary and who is involved with that as well. Also, Doug, I didn't give a chance to you to kind of introduce yourself. So you are a father of how many children?
Two children. High school age and college age, so they're on the front end of their own financial game of life and trying to figure out these issues along with me.
Okay, and you've had buy-in from them? You've kind of experimented with them on this journey as well?
You know, I think that's a strong statement, honestly.
I think
the reality is the evolution to the family CFO takes years and years, and I've certainly exposed them to lots of concepts, but, you know, an important part of learning is making mistakes, and they're they've learned a lot and they're still making mistakes, but I think they're on a good trajectory.
Well, there is one other point you make in your book about starting early and the impact of compounding. And I always tell people it's not just compounding on our assets, it's compounding on our decisions as well. So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk about some of those decisions that we can start making better when we come back. We'll be back in just a sec.
Great.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me this evening author and businessman Douglas McCormick. He is the author of Family Inc., Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth. And Doug, I just want to start by also mentioning, I'm sure your book is probably available on Amazon.
It sure is.
And is it in bookstores at this point yet?
Because it's yes, it is. Most mainstream.
Okay. All right. Family Inc. And it's something certainly worth looking at. Now, we were just talking about what had intrigued me, which was naming the family a chief, naming a chief financial officer in the family to kind of manage the financial decision making and also managing the two businesses, which are the temporary labor business and the asset management business. So let's talk for a minute about the temporary labor business. And since we, before that last break, we mentioned you have two children and trying to get children to buy into this. Do you include your children in the temporary labor business? And the reason I ask that, Doug, is because I started working, well, babysitting every single day when I was 12 years old. And at that point, I started paying for all my own clothes, my lunches at school, and all of that. So unbeknownst to my parents, I was probably part of their temporary labor business. So do we get the kids involved? And then talk about what that means, temporary labor business.
Yeah, we absolutely do get the kids involved. And my general view is you can't start too early on teaching financial literacy concepts. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, though, as a young person, it's less about the compensation that they've received from the work that they've done. And it's more about learning how to sell yourself, learning accountability, learning to be a team, esteem and confidence that comes from that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I think about kids in this model is that the chief financial officer, one of his biggest, most important jobs, his or her biggest, most important jobs, is to help those kids make good decisions about how to maximize their potential.
Mm-hmm.
And that's through generally through education, but also helping them ask important questions about their aptitudes, their interests, how those two come together to influence the kind of careers and the kind of educational choices they should make. And in many cases, these decisions happen pretty early in life. And so someone who can be a CFO / career counselor, that's a really valuable way to impact their trajectory.
Sure. It takes away the tendency to just let things happen to you, right?
Well, I think that's one of the whole concepts of the book is, we call it a temporary labor business because I think the notion of employment is really kind of yesterday's concept. And today, you're an entrepreneur whether you want to be or not because millennials will have likely 10 different jobs and job mobility is not what it used to be. And so you always, I think everybody needs to be thinking about how do I make myself most valuable? How do I garner the best wages in the market for my skills? And how do I develop those skills? Because just showing up for work and doing well is not enough to create financial security today.
Mm-hmm. And so part of that labor force you mentioned, I love the idea about making it not just about the compensation, about managing their potential and having them learn how to be team players and all of that. But you also had said that education obviously helps maximize their potential in that temporary labor asset as well. So can you talk about how that would impact it and what the CFO does in that regard?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's interesting. Education is likely one of the largest investments any individual is going to make. And I would tell you, I think in many cases, we as a society, as families, are making bad decisions because we're not being honest with ourselves. Not everybody has the aptitude or the interest or the desire to pursue a career that needs education. And the worst investment you can make is to start and not finish, or to start and not really acquire the skills you'd hope for.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I think for those that have the aptitude, the motivation, and intend to pursue a career where it can benefit, where they can benefit from education, this is, in my mind, the best investment, lowest risk investment possible.
Mm-hmm.
And when young people tell me they can't afford school, I tell them they cannot afford not to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is probably the single most sure way to financial independence is through good education.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people underestimate the importance of the financial impact of that education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, you're likely to make more money in terms of the job you can acquire. But if you also look at unemployment rates, you're more employable. You're less likely to experience periods of unemployment. And I think especially in today, given how long people are living, educated people have availability to work with their minds, and that allows them to work into their late 60s, 70s. And I think that's harder in professions where you're not, using your intellectual skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the economic benefit of education is really compelling, in spite of its increasing cost.
Right. So I know in the book you also talked about having that education, but also maybe transferable skills as you move through your career as well.
Yeah, I think if you look at the kinds of degrees that make the most money, there's certainly a clear trend. Degrees that are biased toward quantitative problem-solving skills, business and science, are generally paid significantly more than, softer skills like languages and history and philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me take a moment to say I'm not saying that every decision we make should be financially based. And if you're passionate about, history or philosophy, then I think that's what you should do. But I think you should do it understanding the financial implications that you may be choosing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also not just the education, but then how you think about, back to this concept of every person's an entrepreneur, how you think about selling that skill set. And in general, I believe people think too short term when they're thinking about employment. And it's not just how much you're getting paid today, but it's how much you're getting paid today, your chance for advancement, your ability to brand yourself because you're part of a great company. I mean, think of the brand you get if you happen to join Google
mm-hmm.
or Apple. And so that brand is very valuable. So it's really a holistic decision about how to think about that career.
Well, and that would also go back to the CFO managing possibly the asset management as well, because maybe if you understand that that path may not have the returns on it that another position might take, that would mean you need to manage the asset expectations, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the CFO says, well, that's great, and we want you to be passionate about what you're doing, but it doesn't mean you're going to be able to afford, a five-bedroom house in the burbs or something. But I also believe in people being passionate about what they're doing in their career selection, and you can make that work. And that goes back to that also knowing how to sell yourself, too.
Totally agree. And I think it's about making sure that people are making informed decisions. There's no, I don't give advice about what the right decision is. I just want to make sure it's informed in a kind of a holistic way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're, Doug, going to come up on our second break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We are talking with Doug McCormick, author of the new book, Family Inc., that's INC, Family Inc., Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth. We will be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I have as a guest on the telephone this evening, Douglas McCormick. He's author of Family Inc., Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth. We've been talking about how we have a family CEO who helps manage the two businesses for the family, which one being the temporary labor business and the other the asset management business. And Doug, what I think I'd like to do is let's talk just a little bit more about the labor part of that business. And then I actually want to give you an opportunity to kind of give more of the layout of the book. I feel like I have a bunch of questions for you, but about the details in the book, but I really want to give you an opportunity to talk about the layout and why the layout makes sense for managing this business. So first let's go to finishing up about a little bit about the temporary labor. So we talked about career choices, education, you know, understanding the payoff of that temporary labor and where it's going to get you today, but not just today, where it's going to take you in the future. And also, when you look at a job, I try to tell folks it's not just about, you know, that paycheck today. You also want to compare apples to apples if you have more than one job opportunity to look at the benefits that are being given. So a CFO, when they're trying to manage that temporary labor business, they're going to look at what are we getting for that labor, right? So that's not just the paycheck. What else is involved when we're trying to evaluate the benefits of a particular labor assignment?
Yeah, so I kind of look at it as there are a number of soft attributes to the choice, and then there are the economic. And the economic are your compensation, which, you know, is pretty straightforward. But in some cases, people may get exposure to something like stock options or stock ownership, which can be an additional element of the economic package. And then the overall benefits. So that's not only medical benefits, but it's you know, things like educational support. It's things like retirement programs. Does the company offer a retirement program? Is it a defined benefit or defined contribution? It's probably defined contribution given today's environment. And if so, how long until that money is yours? That's called vesting. And how does your employer support that program by matching your investment? So, you know, I think many, especially young people, undervalue some of these benefits. And if you're with an organization for a long time, they can really add up.
Mm-hmm. One thing, too, at the beginning of the book, I think I was reading it in the intro, you were talking about some of your classmates from back when, and you were looking at the different positions you all had had, and you recognized that certain of you took more risk in positions that you had than others. And there's an element of risk someone might be willing to take that might have a certain payoff or a better payoff as well, right? So that's...
Absolutely.
Goes into those considerations.
I give about, I think 10 different recommendations as people think about career advice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my big picture comment as you think about career advice would be people generally underestimate how long they're going to be at it. You know, this is likely a choice that you're going to be making for 50 years, so think long term. Mm-hmm. Growth is probably the single biggest indicator of how much wealth you're likely to have in your career. When I say growth, you know, what industries have you decided to participate in because of that compounding that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, I think I try to say to people, I with my labor, I think like a growth investor. With my dollars, I think like a value investor.
Oh.
And what I mean by that is, you know, with my dollars, if something goes up, I benefit. If something goes down, I'm able to lose that money. But with my labor, I can afford to take more risk. And if things don't go well, I take my labor and I go to the next opportunity.
Mm.
And in spite of not turning out to be a good job, I probably learned a lot.
Right.
So I think people are really compensated to take more risk.
Yeah, that's a good differentiation. Now, you also mentioned during the temporary labor section of the book about complementing that period of time with insurance. So you said the temporary labor could be a 50-year time period. What do you mean by complementing it with insurance?
Well, you know, so I'm a big believer that the first most important way to achieve financial independence is to, you know, kind of eliminate the going out of business scenario or the financial distress scenario. And the way that most frequently happens is people get hurt on the job and they lose their ability not only to earn a paycheck, but they have a lot of expenses that they didn't anticipate. And so as you think about how much labor you own, a young person has a lot more future labor potential than an older person. And so arguably the young person needs a lot more insurance to protect against disability or injury on the job, but also life insurance if he's got a family that's depending on that income.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you think about your career choice, it's really more about a life stage issue. You need to match your insurance needs to where you are in a life stage given the value you have in your labor.
Right. And so many people are lacking the disability coverage. That it really is something that folks need to look at. And that could go into that overall benefits that may be available through employers, or they may have to self-insure, you know, do it through a private provider. So that is something, disability definitely. A lot of people, I think, automatically think, oh, yeah, life insurance because I have a house or, you know, loved ones who might need some cash. But disability there's no coverage if you didn't die, if something just happened to you. So that's good to point out. Now, give the layout of the book, Doug, if you don't mind, because I don't think I'm giving it justice asking you all these questions just because I'm asking you questions because I'm interested in your take on it and your point of view, and I love the idea of running it like a business. But can you give a layout of the book so that people can kind of have a picture of how this can help them organize?
Yeah, I think so. Again, the high-level picture is your family's a business, run it like a CFO. And so Chapter 1 basically covers why every family needs a chief financial officer and explains that business. Section 2 talks about all the ways you should think about maximizing the value of your labor, which for most Americans is your single biggest asset. You know, we always talk about, the Dow's up, the Dow's down, but for every American, they have significant asset value in their labor, and it's the one that's so neglected in my mind.
Right.
Section 3 talks about how to manage your financial assets like a CFO manages a business, and that's much more than simply investing. That's budgeting. That's planning. That's, you know, securing debt when you need it, a whole variety of skills that a CFO would use in his business endeavors. And then I give some very practical tools that I think are equivalent to how a CFO manages the balance sheet, the income statement, and metrics around that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a dashboard to help you assess if you're in good shape, if you're tracking towards your goals. And then I talk a little bit about the later stages of life, and that relates to things like retirement, how to think through how much is enough, how to think through how you're going to spend it, how to think through insurances that may be appropriate at that age, things like long-term care. And then I try to give a little bit of a forward-looking view of how to think about the long-term plan of if you've achieved financial independence, how can you support your kids and the next generation, not only with your financial assets but with the knowledge. How to think about giving to charities. And I'm a big believer in entrepreneurship. And so I talk a little bit about entrepreneurship and what that can mean to the next generation.
And I love the one of the last chapters in the book says, put down the book, just do it. And because one of the things that I had seen a quote once, worrying isn't doing. So I have been saying this over and over in my head again, don't worry, stop worrying. Worrying is not doing, just do. So I love at the end, put down the book, just do it. When we come back, I want to talk about that you also have a website that corresponds to the book. So I forgot I want to mention that. We're going to be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 83 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, chance of showers, lows around 62. Thursday, showers likely, highs around 76. Friday, showers continue with highs in the 80s. Saturday and Sunday, the sun returns with highs each day in the low 80s. The time now is 6:31 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, this evening I have with me author Douglas McCormick. He is the author of Family Inc., Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth. I also want to add, because people may not have caught this at the beginning, that Doug holds a B.S. in economics from West Point and an MBA from Harvard. So you've had a lot of good training, and we appreciate that you're sharing it with all of us with your book. Doug just gave a high-level view of the book. It really is set up, I think, in quite interesting sections. But, Doug, I also wanted to point out one of the chapter names, which I thought was particularly interesting. Know yourself. Understand the psychological factors that can torpedo your goals. So you have a lot of real life, I think, examples in here and step-by-step instructions. But you also have a website that goes with the book as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've tried to make the book, there's a fair amount of explanation on why my recommendations, I believe, make sense and are sound, but it's also designed to be practical so you could put the book down and actually go implement the plan. And so that includes things like developing a family income statement or a family balance sheet and calculators that help you estimate the lifetime value of your Social Security or your earnings potential. And those sound like, you know, scary things, but they're really not. You know, the asset or the balance sheet is simply a listing of all your assets and all your liabilities. The income statement simply tells you how much you're saving. And so the website, familyinc.com, is really designed to be a complimentary tool. So once you've read the book, you could actually go do something about it.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. So we have talked about the business of the temporary labor. Let's talk a minute about what the CFO needs to do as far as the asset management. So,
yes,
if you want to jump into that.
Sure. So I think it's interesting when people think about asset management, I think they often confuse asset management with investing. In my view, investing is a very narrow part of what's required to achieve financial independence. You know, investing is simply you're buying some asset, a stock or a bond, with the intent to make a profit. And candidly, very few people have the skill set to do that well. Asset management is much more broad skill set, and it's really about how do you manage all of the assets that the family has so that your labor, which we've talked a lot about, it's your home, it may be your cars, it's certainly your financial investments, and it's all of those skills. And so as you think about those skills, it's things like the budgeting, the investing, the retirement planning, the insurance planning, all those relate to your asset management activities.
Yeah, I'm looking at the section of the book. It's called The Elements of Asset Management. And you say, before developing a specific asset management investment program, let's review the key functions that your asset management business serves. The six primary functions of your asset management business are to... Can I run through these? Because
sure.
I think they're good.
Yeah.
This is on page 58 of the book. Provide a safety net when your labor business underperforms. Provide short-term liquidity to manage family Inc. So that's when we talk to folks about emergency reserves. Acquire business and consumption assets. So that might be something we want to talk about for a minute. Four, accumulate wealth. Great. Five, pay for consumption when your labor assets are exhausted. And six, fund the seed capital for the next generation of family business. So maybe we could talk about some of those elements.
Sure. So I think, you know, the first two are really designed, again, people so often focus about my long-term financial security is I've got to focus way in the future. And granted, at some point that's going to be important, but there's nothing more important than tomorrow. And so to make sure that you're capable of enduring some unexpected event because you've created some contingency reserves or you had the cash to, you know, pay for, you know, some short-term need is really critical. You know, when people get in financial distress, the cost of that financial distress is very, very high and it's very difficult to recover. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, I think you can overcome poor returns in the market, you can overcome bad investment choices a lot easier than you can overcome financial distress and things like bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, rule number one is make sure you've satisfied or prepared for the near-term problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I think the second point you brought up was this balance between managing the assets for consumption and savings. And, you know, throughout a life, you're going to do both. And, you know, as a young person, in many cases, you actually go further into debt as you make investments that are really consumption-oriented because you're setting yourself up. And so often new families, they get houses, they need to furnish them, they need to get a car, they have children. And so, you know, those are all very important things of life, and I'm not recommending you minimize them. I'm recommending that you're always trying to balance the needs of consumption today versus your long-term needs of savings so you can have a secure retirement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the accumulating wealth is pretty much simply, now that I've had some savings, how can I put those savings into investments that are going to continue to grow in a tax-efficient way over a long period of time? And, you know, just to dive into it for a second, I'm a big believer in long-term focused returns, which are best achieved through passive investing with heavy equity exposure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think retirement is not only understanding how much you need to retire, but then having a plan around what that spend down strategy looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And how to think about the asset allocation in retirement versus when you're working. So I believe the business, we talk about Family Inc., the business changes when you retire. Early in your career, you can endure a lot more risk because you have labor and
right.
you can cut when things go poorly. You can always work longer. You can save more. Once you get to retirement, you've got to either have enough excess or cushion that you can endure some bad returns, or likely you may need to consider some kind of insurance, whether it be an annuity or long-term care, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth is risk management, and that changes throughout a life. Early on, it's disability insurance and life insurance and maybe umbrella insurance, and as you go later in life, it gears toward things that are more likely to happen, like a focus on health insurance and a focus on long-term care insurance, which is becoming increasingly, you know, as lives get longer, increasingly problematic.
Right.
You know, my general philosophy around insurance is I think insurance is a loser's game, but it's still a very viable part of the strategy because many of us cannot afford to not be insured. So it's not a good investment, but it's a necessary evil.
Mm-hmm. But though to your point, and the CFO would have to always kind of reassess the need for it, because what sometimes I think people forget is that that need may have changed, and we kind of keep going along, and if we're not revisiting our business, then we might not realize, what life insurance we had to protect us for the mortgage or the college cost. Well, maybe the mortgage is now paid off. Maybe the college is paid off. And so that kind of has to always be reassessed as well.
Totally. So I think it's an interesting evolution. You know, over time, your life insurance need should actually go down because you have less obligations that you're going to have to satisfy.
Mm-hmm.
Your long-term care insurance may need to go up. But I would argue, hopefully, you're accumulated enough wealth that you may choose to say, you know what, I don't need those insurances anymore because I've accumulated enough wealth that I can endure that risk,
mm-hmm.
which is probably a better expected outcome, more likely to be volatile, but a better expected outcome.
Mm-hmm. One thing you had mentioned, too, I think, and I missed jumping on it right when you said it, was about investing for the long term. One thing I think that sometimes people don't recognize is that you might retire at 65, but you might have a 30-year time horizon, and they think they're investing for, you know, tomorrow. So
yes,
that's kind of
yes.
To your point, when you're looking at the time frame, you're not necessarily having to invest like you're going to use it all tomorrow.
Yeah, I think, I believe, you know, if you break it down very simply, there are three big risks to investments. There's inflation risk, there's price risk, or not investments, but your family Inc.,
mm-hmm.
and there's longevity, living too long,
mm-hmm.
which is not it's a good thing, but financially it's challenging. I think most people focus on price risk. You know, did the market move up or down today? And they feel that acutely. But the bigger risks in my mind are far greater risks of long-term inflation and longevity or living longer than you expected.
Mm-hmm. So now we've kind of talked about some of these concepts like the temporary labor, managing the assets, you have your CFO in place. How do we get buy-in from the family? Do you go through that in the book?
I do. But I think it's through exposure to these concepts. You know, I think the great thing about the framework of the book is every person, you know, every family member can fit into that framework. And so your young kids can see where they are in that life cycle. And the other thing is there's so much everyday activity around these choices. So there's always good training material. You know, if you're buying a car or you're doing a budget or you're thinking about planning for a vacation and the implications for your budget or your savings, if you can engage the kids in a conversation, you know, I think there are just so many valuable teaching moments throughout life. You know, I will say to become a good family CFO, I think, is a lifelong journey. And so to expect that your kids are going to be, you know, have all this mastered when they walk out of the house at 18 or 20, whatever the age is, that's probably unrealistic, too.
But you know what? They might feel like they don't have it mastered, but all of a sudden they'll start recognizing those concepts if there was conversation about it in the home. I mean, growing up, for me, we worked because if we wanted anything, we had to have our own money to pay for it. But we didn't have conversations about, Lori, what are you doing with your money? I spent my money on, you know, I spent all my money. No one told me to save it. But I was buying clothes. I was paying for gas for my car. I mean, I actually had to use it for living because we weren't having those conversations. You know, I mean, I
yeah.
have conversations with my kids now. It'll be, if it's worth buying, then it would be worth spending your own money on, correct? And all of a sudden, they don't want to spend their money on whatever it was. And that lesson learned, it wasn't that important then, was it? But it's a part of this is about having those conversations. Do you go through some examples in the book of how families, like, do you have family meetings? At
yeah,
what kinda, age does know, it start?
Yeah, a lot of the book is based on my experiences with my father, who was a teacher, but also loved investing. And so we had a great relationship where he would take the opportunity to teach me along the way. So just by way of example, I got started with my first investment at age 7 because my dad helped me think through how I should invest some money that I made from a paper route.
Mm-hmm.
And just that exposure at a very early age got me very interested and excited. We've kept that tradition in my family where for Christmas every year I give my kids some stock, which they get to decide what company.
Mm.
And it's really fun because, first of all, they own things that have nothing to do with whether it's necessarily a good investment, but they're meaningful in their lives. So my son owns Chipotle. He owns Facebook. He owns Google. And it's a great way for us
to
connect. I've eaten way more Chipotle than I want.
Mm-hmm.
But he's empowered by that sense of ownership, and it's been a great vehicle for teaching.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. Doug, we're taking our last break. When we come back, we can talk a little bit more about the structure of the book, how we can help people move forward, a little bit about the website, and we'll finish up. Folks, I haven't given the phone number often enough tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have with me this evening author Doug McCormick, author of Family Inc., Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth. Doug, I just want to go through naming some of these chapters so people have an idea, because we've only really kind of done a very high-level discussion of some of the items in the book. For example, Section 3 says manage your assets like a CFO manages a business. And there's several chapters here, folks. And it's, for example, your financial assets serve many functions in your family business. Another chapter, diversify your family business with the right investments. Chapter 9, define the right goals for your asset management business. Chapter 10, use history to make reasonable investment assumptions. Chapter 11, safeguard your assets from the main risks. Chapter 12, not all debt is bad. Use debt to purchase assets and maximize your liquidity. And it goes on and on. Those are just some of the, it goes into quite a bit of detail from what I could see for helping folks get their arms around this, especially for people who may not have a whole lot of experience in managing their assets. And again, I always want to pull back in case people didn't hear the beginning of the show, this concept of managing your temporary labor business. I just love that. So we talked a little bit about then having that CFO, managing the temporary labor business, looking at the asset management, some of those choices. The website, are there going to be tools available to people who may not be, I imagine you probably have to join the website to get all of the tools and functions of it, but are there some tools that people could go or materials on that website that people could go get more information?
Yes. Yeah, no, all the tools are free. And so anybody that goes to the site, you join the family, but there's no cost to that. It's just to get your information, and then you have access to the tools.
Okay. And it's familyinc.com?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
F-A-M-I-L-Y-I-N-C, familyinc.com. Then, Doug, when you talked earlier about setting up, like doing an inventory, I quite often tell folks, do an inventory of your assets. So that balance sheet, that asset list, that's what you're talking about, and they would be able to go online and start filling that in?
That's correct.
And does that include their liabilities? When we talk about balance sheet, sometimes people don't understand what a balance sheet might be.
Yes. So basically there are four major calculators. There's a balance sheet, which would allow you to list all of your assets and your liabilities. There's an income statement. There is a calculator that helps you estimate your remaining lifetime labor, and also a calculator that helps you estimate your expected Social Security. And, you know, I tell people, when you think about estimating those kind of things, all we know for sure is they'll be wrong, the estimates.
Uh-huh.
But it's a helpful way to think about it and begin to frame out, you know, where your assets are and where you're going to derive the money that you're going to consume, you know, for the next 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I would say it's a little bit daunting, but I think if you read the book, it's very manageable. And once you've actually set it up, to maintain it is not much work at all. You know, I personally like to try to maintain that monthly or quarterly, and it's very helpful because it gives you a very good snapshot of where you are today, and it also allows you to see the progress that you're making as you think about what your long-term goals are.
Does it allow you on the liability side to enter, like, the interest rates that you might have on your various loans for, like, the home or the car and things like that?
You know, it does not, mm-hmm. And that's not that it should, actually. It's just it's not that sophisticated. But
they
could
put it in the description. They could, you know,
if
they have the ability to put in a description, they could put that amount in the description.
Yeah, and I think it helps get people focused on, you know, when you're thinking about your debts, you've got to be thoughtful about not only the how long it's outstanding for, but the cost of that debt.
Right, agreed. Now, you mention in the book something about succession planning for Family Inc. And on page 215, you promote financial incentives for members of the family, for mm-hmm. members of Family Inc. Do you want to talk about that for a minute? And then I want to give you some time at the end to also talk about your section on the legacy and charitable giving, because I know that's important to you. So first, about the succession planning.
Yeah, so this is another concept in business. You know, businesses focus a lot on succession planning as the CFO or CEO gets ready for retirement, or if something would happen unexpectedly, who's prepared to be in charge. And I find it so ironic, you know, you spend an entire life, many people spend an entire life accumulating wealth, sometimes generations, only to not plan when something happens to them such that it's in the hands of somebody that's ill-prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, it's one of the most neglected elements of a good financial planning plan is this succession planning and training. And it really is a combination of providing clarity about what you want to have happen with tools like wills and trusts. And then it's also this long-term educational process so that you've given your heirs the skills and the values that are consistent with how you would like them to operate.
Mm-hmm.
So you asked the question specifically about incentives. You know, so I think there are all kinds of interesting ways to get family members engaged and to promote the right kind of choices. So I'm not saying these are right or wrong. I think different families have different values. But, for example, I've seen families subsidize investments in education. And so, you know, again, if you believe that education is one of the best investments possible, you know, if you can create a scenario where your kids feel like that's a really good investment, particularly good because they're going to only pay part, or you're going to help them with that educational choice, I think that's a great incentive.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people match savings programs. So, you know, for every dollar up to a certain amount, the same way your retirement program at work may work, you know, families could do that. And I also think, you know, paying family members to be involved in managing the family business. So if you had a family member that you're going to ask them to take care of some rental properties or manage, you know, the insurance activities, that's another way to draw them in to educate them, but also get them very familiar with the family circumstances.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have three children, and my first daughter, I told her she was responsible for watching the other ones when I was working. I was lucky enough to have some flexible hours. And also to get an academic scholarship because she was very intelligent. And she did get an academic scholarship, but not as much as we were hoping. You know, it was in part. My second one was quite athletic, and I said, Lauren, your job is to get an athletic scholarship. And her goal, so she set up this goal because she saw how my first daughter, you know, it paid off, that investment in her academic education. And my second daughter, she was really set on getting a D1 full ride. And I had told her, I said, if you get that, because we already had budgeted that we were going to pay so much for our kids, not the whole thing, but so much for our kids each year. And I said, if you get that scholarship when you graduate from college, we are going to have cash set aside for you because we didn't have to make those payments. And sure enough, she got that full ride. And sure enough, my daughter got cash when she just graduated a few weeks ago. And you know what? It really made a difference for her. She was a hard worker. She worked really, really hard. And now she's coming out of school with confidence and a nest egg to set up her first apartment, to get her job, to have her car. And it really made a difference. But she worked hard. And that's why she got it. So,
yeah, I think some people feel like those kind of arrangements seem too businessy and not consistent with the family. But I fundamentally believe incentives really matter. So you know, you've created some powerful incentives there. Interestingly, my dad did something very similar to me, and so I was the beneficiary of getting that money that he had set aside for me to go to college because my undergraduate degree had been paid for.
Yeah, that's a nice incentive, isn't it, though?
Powerful incentives, yeah.
Yeah. And I think we have to be careful, too, then, sometimes, though, when we think about our own upbringing, because my husband and I were bent on helping our children with their education because our parents could not help us with our education. So we probably have to be careful as the CFO in Family Inc. to be careful about letting some prejudices into our decision-making, I would expect, as well.
Yeah, I would say a little bit off tangent, but I think relevant to the conversation. I find that, you know, people don't appreciate sometimes wealth can be a real liability.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if young kids accumulate wealth through inheritance or what have you, it's a tremendous responsibility, and I've seen it create some pretty negative behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think as you think about your family planning, it's obviously a tremendous asset and good fortune, but it comes with great responsibility, and being able to teach that is not always easy.
Mm-hmm. Now, you do have a section on charitable giving in the book. If you can just give us some quick highlights on that, because we have just a few minutes left, and I want to let you finish with what kind of a summary as well. So what in the book would you like to share about the charitable giving?
Yeah, I think I would tell you that many of the concepts that are applied throughout the book in terms of how to manage your family finances are relevant as you think about how to be a valuable charitable giver. And, you know, I preach the benefits of entrepreneurship, and entrepreneurship is essentially combining your capital with your labor. And I think the same model applies in charity. So I'm a big believer in you're a better giver of dollars if you're also a giver of your time, because you become more informed and more thoughtful about what the best charities are in a specific space.
Mm.
I also think that in general, if you know, I think you should give to the community and give to the things that are around you to be a good member of your community. But as you think about concentrating your giving, I think there's benefit to becoming relatively narrow in something that you know a lot about. So I think about it the same way I think about my investing, and I try to find situations where I'm very knowledgeable so I can be a good steward of that charitable gift.
That's a great way to put it. Doug, thanks so much for being here. How do people get more information about this book? Where do they find it?
You know, the easiest way is probably Amazon, Amazon.com, and FamilyInc.com. The website, also lots of information on the philosophy, my background, the tools, and so, you know, easy to get if you're close to a computer.
Okay, and I think it's a great concept. Family Inc., using business principles to maximize your family's wealth. Douglas McCormick, author, thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night. folks, we appreciate that we have the opportunity here at WDIY to be able to get authors such as Doug to talk about important books. You know, Doug being getting his BS from West Point and his MBA from Harvard, and then writing this book for folks who may not have that financial literacy because we're not teaching it in schools today. So it's a great way, if you weren't raised with those financial concepts in your own family, to get some ideas of how to do that and how it can make such a difference in your life. Stephen, who submitted a question via the website, I will answer you via email tomorrow so I can take a little time to answer your question. I appreciate you sending that question in. Folks, always know that that is available as well at yourfinancialchoices.com if you have questions. Next week, we are talking about takeaways from past shows. So I'm going to go look and call through all the old shows I've done and talk about some of the best takeaways from those. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank Jeff for being here, Lori for being here, and of course our guest author, Doug McCormick. And remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.